Okay, I just to recap a couple of people who were not here last time. The whole exercise we are doing here is to look at the Upanishads in a different light, as it has been looked at for the most part, especially in the West and also within India itself, as somehow or other giving us a philosophical view or a religious view of life and the world, and since Upanishads have been the basis of all the Vedantic philosophies and theologies of medieval India, that's the predominant way to look at this. I'm looking at them as literature, and to see it in a different light, how they use language for both literary, aesthetic, and the theological purposes. Right, so the use of language becomes important, and so paying attention. Close attention to how they construct their narrative. And this particular text is very significant because it is a narrative. So it falls into the very old Indian literary genre of Katha, you know, which is the narrative literature, which becomes very significant later on, both for aesthetic and for religious reasons. I mean, look at, for example, the Jataka tales of the Buddhists, you know, which are basically narratives, but used for a religious purpose. Okay, so with that, let's go in here. I think I'm trying to see where we stopped last time. So we are coming on page 56 to the third and the final part of this dialogue, actually third and penultimate part of this dialogue. And that's a dialogue between the father, Uddalaka Aruni, and the king, Jaivali. Right? This is after his son, Shvetaketu, has refused to go back to the king. Right? So that's in the Brihadaranyaka. Chandogya is, of course, silent on this point. Chandogya always presents Shvetaketu with in a little bit better light than Brihadaranyaka. Okay. So we start on number 28, according to my sort of division here. In the Brihadaranyaka, we have a Sa Ajagama Gautamo Yatra Pravahanasya Jaivaler Asa. Here again, it's nothing much. Then the Gautama went to where Pravahana Jaivali was. Again, use of the Ajagama, Agam here, as opposed to when we go to the Chandogya, Saha Gautamo Ragnyo Ardham Eaya. I really do not know what to make of this distinction, which continues throughout the narrative. Whether it is purely dialectical differences, you know, regional differences of choice of words, or whether there is something more to it than that. In the Kaushitaki, which is, as we saw, it is a very the narrative is somewhat abbreviated. It says Saha Samitpanish Chitram Gangayanim Prati Chakrama. He went to Gangayana, that's the name of the king in this narrative, carrying firewood in the hand. Firewood in the hand, of course, is a common theme with regard to a student going to become a student. So in a sense, we see both in Kaushitaki and Brihadaranyaka, Uddalaka really becomes Upanita, you know, one who has undergone some kind of initiation ceremony to become a student. So this is very interesting inversion, because he is the Brahmin becoming a student of royalty. So we have in the Kaushitaki that thing. Come on in. Oh, the exciting part is over now, so the boring part is starting. So 28, we have Uddalaka going to the king. And 29, what happens after he goes there? Brihadaranyaka is fulsome. It's a long narrative here. Tasmai asanam ahutya. So to him, having brought a seat, udakam aharayang chakara, he had his servants bring water. for the guest. Atha then hasmai to him argyang chaka. He gave him that argya. Argya is a very technical term that's given to a particular kind of water with various kinds of flour, etc. in it that you give to a very important guest. So with everything in the Brihadaranyaka, it seems that that Gautama is received with great ceremony, you know, by this king. Chandogya omits all this detail and says, Tasmai ha praptaya, to him when he has arrived, arhang chakara. Arha is a he received him politely. You know, he and if you want to go further up, you can say he paid him homage. Arha is a sort of a neutral word. And that's all. Okay? But he continues in a line 30, which is not found anywhere else. Chandogya continues, Saha Prataha, and in the morning, so we had to understand that he spent the night there. Right? Sort of understood. Sabhagaha, having gone to the Sabha, the term Sabha and Samiti are used interchangeably in this literature to mean audience hall or where the king saw people. And he went there. And then Udayaya, again the E is here. He stood up. Gautama. Yeah. Go to 31. Then he begins with the king telling Udalaka that he'll give him a boon, a wish. This is the normal thing for kings to do or gods to do to people. Tamha Ovacha and Brihadaranyaka, mind you, Kaushitika is completely empty here. There's no narrative at all. Tamha Ovacha Varang Bhagavate Gautamaya Dadmaiti. So he said to him, I mean the king said to Udalaka, I will give Bhagavate Gautamaya to honorable or reverend Gautama a wish. Chandogya is interesting. Tangha Uvacha, he said to him, Manushasya Bhagavan Gautama Bittasya Varang Vranitha iti. Choose a wish, Reverend Gautama, that is among the human riches. Immediately he says, ask me anything that is human, contrasting with something else that is unstated. Right? So, Manusha. Brihadaranyaka, however, the narrative is longer, as we can see in 32. Sahovacha, so this is the Gautama, the real problem in Sanskrit with the pronouns. You never know where the referent is, right? So it's a real problem. You'll see a couple here. You have to sort of, Sanskrit never pays any attention to it. Sahovacha, he said here, meaning Gautama, Pratignyatoma esha varaha. Now you have promised me this vara. Because this vara is in Brihadaranyaka unspecified. You know, choose a boon. He says, now you have promised me a boon, right? Then he goes on to ask what that wish is. Yam tu kumarasya ante vacham abhashata. So, which speech you said in front of the boy, of the child, tamme bruhi, tell me that. There's somewhat unclear what he's getting at. Did he ask him to tell him the questions he asked or the answers to these questions? So it's sort of left a little unclear there. Chandogya is very different. Chandogya, Gautama is quite haughty. Sahovacha, Gautama tells, Tava eva rajan manusham vittam. Keep your manusha vitta to yourself. Sort of a very, very confrontational. Yammeva kumarasya ante vacham bhashathas tammeva mebru. And this seems to say that, almost threatening, tell me, you know, what you told before my son. Almost like a saying, you picked on my little fella. Yeah? Now pick on a big guy. Yeah? And sort of there seems to be a little change in tone. that okay? And the contrast is very clear. Brihadaranyaka continues, Sahovacha, now this is the king talking, the king says, Daiveshu vai Gautama tad, that is among the Daiveshu, a divine vara. Manushanam bruhi, tell me something among the human ones. So there's this now a little debate going on. It's, I didn't promise that. That's a divine thing. I want to say, tell something that is, give something that is human. Chandogya says, Sah Kruchri Babhuva. He became distressed, Kruchri. Now it's unclear who this Sah is. Most translators take this Sah as the king, who became chagrined because now he has to reveal his knowledge. Right? I have, however, taken the contrarian thing. I've written a comment on it later, that this Sir refers to Uddalaka rather than to the king. And after saying this, he became rather agitated. But that doesn't really concern us very much here. Why I say that is really the Sir and Tham seem to be very clearly demarcated in Chandogya. Sir referring to Uddalaka and Tham referring to Uddalaka being the object, Sir being the Uddalaka as a subject. It just goes on like that. So that's how I think that this Sir probably refers to Uddalaka. Is that okay? Yeah? In 34, we have this long narrative portion, not found in Chandogya, where Gautama argues, saying that he needs to get this Daivavara rather than the Manusha. He says, Sahovacha, Vinyayate, you well know, because they probably knew each other. Ha asti hiranyasya apattam, go ashvanam, dasinam, pravaranam, paridhanasya. It is well known that I have my share of gold, cows, horses, slave girls, blankets, and clothes. So he's a rich man already. Mano Bhagavan, Bahor, Anantasya, Aparyantasya, Abhiava, Danyo, Bhutiti. Do not be stingy, Abhiava Danyo. Do not be stingy, sir, in giving me more, Bahor. Now, what is this more? The infinite and the boundless. It's sort of very interesting in the Yajnavalkya's conversation with Maitreya, you may remember. This same thing. He says, I will divide my wealth between you and Katyayani. And he says, what's the use of riches? You know, tell me by which I will become immortal. That's a sort of similar thing. So I have my share of wealth. Tell me something more than that. 35 is interesting. So king says, okay, I'll do that. But he says, Savai Gautama Hirthena Ichasa Iti. So he says, then Gautama, you will have to request Hirthena. A very interesting word that occurs many places, which means in the proper manner, in the manner that is prescribed. Hirthena. And then in 36, Brihadaranyaka continues, Upayimi aham bhagavantam iti. I come to you, literally. Upa imi aham bhagavantam. I have put it as a pupil because upa e has this technical meaning of coming near, from which you also get the upanayana, upanita. So that is a technical term of a pupil going as a student to become a student with a teacher. And then 37 seems almost a gloss, you know, by the editor of this, saying, but what does that mean? It may be, we may be talking about a time when going to a teacher had more ceremony in it than just saying, I come to you as a upen. And he says, Vacha hasma purve upa yanti. Purve. People of olden days went as pupils, vacha, only with their word. not with any other kind of ceremony, right? It seems an explanation by the editor saying, I mean, probably 36 he found in his sources, and now he's trying to explain. Now, all this is missing in Chandogya, as you can see, right? But it has, at 35, instead of the king telling Gautama, you know, you should come in the proper manner, meaning only a teacher can, only a pupil can be taught. This goes back to Upanishadic thinking. You may see that Satyakama Jabala, interesting man, whose mother was a Paricharini, we talked about that a little bit at the very beginning of the class, right, was a maid, and during her maid service conceived this man, boy. So he had no father. So he says, I want to go to study. What is my gotra? And he says, I had you when I was going around like this. I'm Jabala, and so you will become Jabala. So you give the name Jabala. He went and told the teacher, this is, and teacher says, no one but a Brahmin could speak truth like that. And he said, you must be a Brahmin, and took him over to teach, right? And then he goes on later. His teacher was a real, you know, bad guy, who gave him 1,000 bad, scrawny, cows to go and tend and bring them back doubled. Who went, and then he is taught by various beings, cows and bulls and etc. But he comes back and he says, and he asks his teacher, because he says only knowledge received from a teacher is fruitful. So this interesting theory that only knowledge that comes from a guru can be beneficial to you, not something that you pick up, you know, from various sources, including books, I guess.
Yathari Dhrumata recognizes, he says he shines.
Yes, he shines. He has that. But then he goes on to say that he wants to get it from the teacher, right? Yes, he has some. You look like you have something there, he says. He's shining. You know, right? Who taught you, right? Yes, exactly. And he said, Amanusha, non-human beings. But here, Chandogya, which is very interesting, Tangha, so two Uddalaka, Chirang Vasa Iti, live here long time, stay here long. Ajnapayam Chakar. I'm not sure whether you all have looked at this. The two terms, Agnyapayati and Vignyapayati, two things that come even in later classical Sanskrit as two very interesting terms, which means the same thing, technically. Make something known. That's all what you have. But Agnyapayati always has taken in the conversation, in the language, the meaning of ordering. Agnyapayati is always used from a higher to a lower. And from a lower, it always vignata. So it sort of requests something as opposed to ordering. So a king will order a servant to go and bring him some water, right? While a lower person will ask the king for a wish, and that will be vignata. So here he uses this technical term, agnyapa. So here's the king ordering about an old Brahmin. That's very interesting. And also to say, stay here a while. I can't do it today. It's almost like dismiss. So that's, I think, the 39 is interesting in the sense that in Brihadaranyaka, Jaivali says that he cannot refuse a man like Gautama, who has come here in humility, come as a student. Who can refuse a man like you? And so vacha tathanastvam Gautama ma aparadha stavacha pitamaha yatha yam vidya itah purvam na kasminchana brahmana uva. He Jaivali says, as before now, this knowledge has not resided in any Brahmin. So may you, Gautama, or your grandfathers not cause us harm. This little worried about the harm that you cause. Tam tu aham tubhyam vakshyami. But that I will tell you. I will explain. That vidya, right? And this is the interesting part, the last one. Kohi tava evang bruvantam arhati pratyakyatum. Who can refuse pratyakyatum? Who can refuse? Tava tu evam bruvantam. You who speaks like that. In other words, you who speaks in such humble way. This is interesting if you contrast that with the Kaushitika, who comes back now. This is the thing that Kaushitika has. Tangho vacha. So to him, the king says, Brahma argohi argosi Gautama yo namanam upaga. You have proved yourself worthy of Brahman. Interesting, the word Brahman here. We'll talk about that if you want to. Oh, Gautama, you who have not succumbed to pride, namanam upaga, who is not proud, unlike his son. Right? Ehi. There's another word, the word that is used by the teacher. If you look in the Javala conversation, the word comes back. Upayami is the pupil telling the teacher, and ehi means come. That it is the formal acceptance of the student by the teacher. Vi eva tva nyapayishyami. So I will teach you. Vidnyapayas. Here, vidnyana. When we go to Chandogya, we have a slight change of tone, not a whole lot, but slight change of tone. Tangho vata yata matvam gautama avadha yata yam na praktvatta pura vidya brahmananam gacchati. As you have told me, Gautama, before you, this knowledge has not reached Brahmins in the past. There is something that Gautama may have said here, which is not in the text. So this is where there are lacuna in the text. You have this yata, as you tell me, but Gautama has not told him anything in the narrative as we have. So there could be a lacuna here of a narrative tradition, you know, from which this is extracted and something has been omitted here.
But can't it refer to the fact that he's trying to learn about something that he doesn't know?
Yeah, yes, that certainly is possible. But you say yatha yam gautama avadha, as you tell this to me. And then immediately he says, in both traditions, this has not been with Brahmins. So it's not just a saying that you have asked me, you know, to teach you, but there is something there in which he says, now you tell me this, and it seems that what you tell me is explained by the fact that this vidya was not with Brahmins. There should be something, a missing link there, that makes us, even to translate it in English, difficult. Right? Because there's a missing. But this is important with Chandogya. He continues, which is something that is not found in the other two versions. Telling how, according to Chandogya, Jaivali is arrogant. And he continues, Tasmad, therefore, Sarveshu Lokeshu, in all the words, Kshatrasya eva prashasanam abhut. In all the words, therefore, government, prashasana, they're able to order around, has belonged exclusively to kshatra. That's why the Brahmins don't have that ability. We have a particular kind of knowledge which allows us to rule. And there it ends. Although it continues in the sense of what I have given you in the other one. But let's see whether we can at least, time is, we have half an hour, maybe able to at least make some. Oh, just one more point on that one about Chirang Vasa. This is the second person singular imperative, Vasa, which you normally don't use in polite conversation in Sanskrit. Right? You put something else, like arhati, you know, vasitum arhati, you know, please, like English, please, you know, will you? Even in English, we try to, you know, you don't say, you know, come here, you know, you can say, will you come here? You know, that there is something about that imperative that is jarring, and he uses it, the word vasa, chirang. All right. Okay, we have now the instruction of the king. And the two are, Brihadaranyaka is on page 146. And the Chandogya is 234. I'm just taking these two. And here, let's go to number two, the second one, the middle. On in Chandogya and in Brihadaranyaka, the penultimate 1-9. Okay. So let's read the Brihadaranyaka one first. Asau vai loko agnir daltama. Are you with me? Yeah, everyone? Asau vai loko agnir daltama. That world, O Gautama, fire. And if you go to Chandogya, you have a very similar thing. Asau, vava and vaya are two emphatic particles. Loko, Gautama, Agni. So it is nothing to choose. Except to show again this deictic pronoun asau, which shows asau loka up there in the sky. Right? So he starts with the word Agni. And let's sort of quickly read this. Tasya aditya eva samit. And that's the same in both recensions. Rashmayo dumaha. Same in both recensions. Except that in the Chandogya, as we have in the manuscripts, they have sort of separated these into separate vidandas. Archir ahar archihi. That's also the same in. Disho Angara. And here we have Chandrama Angara. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't translate this. Okay. The Aditya, the sun is the firewood. The sun beams as the smoke. The flame is the day. Embers are either the moon or the quarters. There are two different versions here. Dishaha in Brihadaranyaka and Chandrama, moon, in the Chandogya version. Nakshatrani Vishpulingaha, and the nakshatras, the constellation, the stars, are the sparks that come from them. And in Brihadaranyaka version, Avantaridisho Vishpulingaha. Intermediate direction. There are four directions, right? North, south, east, west. Then you have the four intermediate, northeast, north, southeast. Are the Vishpulinga. Tasmin ne tasmin. This is a common Upanishadic way of saying twice, you know, tas, sah, and asia. Tasmin ne tasmin. Which means in this very, it's sort of a, you know, repetitive thing which emphasizes in this very fire. Tasmin etasmin agnav devaha, same in both recensions, shraddham juhuvati, offers shraddha. I'll come to that in a second. Tasya ahutehe, from that offering, somo raja sangbhavati. From that offering arises, comes into being, King Soma. Whatever that may mean. Could be the moon, it could be Soma, you know, sort of quite somewhat unclear here. But something that I may want to refer to is what Shraddha means here. Shraddha is an interesting term. And in later times, it means faith, and translated that way, to place faith, Shraddha and Dhadhati, Shraddha. But this has been shown conclusively by many scholars that in the early period of Indian history, and in fact, into the later period, Shraddha quite frequently refers to the kind of inner mental state with which somebody gives a gift. I have often translated this, not in this particular passage, in others, as a spirit of generosity. You know, the spirit that makes the gift fruitful. You know? Not, you know, he's asking me for 10 bucks and you know, really badgering me. I said, okay, take it. You know, that's not Shraddha. Okay, that's, so this Shraddha is very important, from which you get the term Shraddha. As an act. So you can see the connection with gift-giving. You can see most often Shraddha is connected with somebody giving something. Okay? Remember also in the Pali, in the early Buddhist text, you have Saddhadeyam Bhunjitva, having eaten what is given through Shraddha. So the Buddhist monks eat things that are given through faith, through Shraddha. You know? And I think the word faith, the way we normally take it, probably does injustice. There's only catches only a small portion of the semantic range of the Shraddha. And we can see how later on too, maybe the next time we meet, we'll talk a little bit about Shraddha, because the whole point here is that you are going beyond Shraddha. If you, since we are at it, if you turn to number 24 in the page, in the very next page, number 24 in the Brihadaranyaka, and number 2 in Chandogya, I'm reading the Chandogya one, Yecha ime aranye shraddha tapa ityopasate. Those who in the aranya, in the wilderness, upasate, venerate shraddha as tapa. In other words, they have given up shraddha, and they are taken up tapas, and say tapas is the true Shraddha. So they, and that's quite interesting. And since I'm at it, I may as well see this. And here in both you have Aranye in the Brihadaranyaka version, Aranye Shraddhang Satyam Upasate. Here you have tapas and here Satyam, right? Either way. Satya becomes a substitute for Shraddha. Another term that is very important in the Upanishads, and I sort of, in my introduction, refers to that, is upas, upasati. Generally viewed as venerate. But it's much more than venerate. Because there's always two things compared. Shraddha and this, and venerate as the link between these. And what happens here is that you are mentally making one the same as the other, or substituting the one for the other. And the word that we will see for this substitute, so we can see it pass here. Pass, you know. And the other is, again, upa. Desha. And of course, you have upa, ni, sat. They all have very similar meanings. Upas we saw in the sense of comparing two things and saying this is the same as that. Right? This is the concept that you find in the Brahmana literature already, the concept of bandhu. Bandhu literally means relative. This is the homologization of the soldier says, your right eye is the same as the sun, right? So you have connected the two, the macrocosmic and the microcosmic. So that's the bandhu. And these all, to some degree, get connected to this. So you have the upasya, and upadesha actually is a grammatical term. This comes from the Indian tradition of grammar, where the grammarians say, when you have this, you substitute that with this. And these are merely grammatical functions. You find this in Panini, Upadesha, all that, right? Because they have meta language. And when you say meta language, then you have this, you don't use that in real language. You take that out and put something else in it, right? And that's the Upadesha, right? So when you say, this is the Upadesha, quite frequently it is translated as, this is the instruction. But it captures so little of the meaning of the word Upadesha. It means that this is the Upadesha, meaning this is how you take something that is very well known, Shraddha, like everybody, ordinary people use that, and say the Upadesha is Satyam. Right? You do, that is much better than this, you know, or at a higher level. And Upanishad ultimately is the same thing. Right? It is a thing where of Upanishad as connection, how the whole the world is connected. A little bit in my introduction here on the meaning. Often it, again, because of the word sad, to sit, has been viewed as Upanishad, like you are the Upanishad here, right? We are all seated in a thing. And many early scholars, and even today, quite frequently people say that the meaning of Upanishad goes back to a place where the teacher with a group of students are teaching. You know, it's probably not true. You know? And probably it comes from these very similar kinds of and these are Upanishad, of course, often viewed as a secret. That's also the meaning of it. It is secret because people don't know now, normally. So this is only Evang Veda, those who know this. So only a particular group of people have access to this knowledge. That's why Jaivali is telling this is a secret knowledge. Not everybody has it. That not everybody knows these bandhus. And that's this whole thing of what the Upanishads are trying to do here.
So,
yeah,
absolutely. The Shraddha of Nachiketa in the Katha Upanishad. I always thought, how would you explain that? Is also a moment of something, like a transformative moment of something that happens to him? Because I always, he offers himself as a present to his father?
Yes. I would need to take a look at this in order to look at that. But I'm not trying to say that Shraddha does not mean faith. It does mean faith. But I'm saying that it is more than that. It's a particular kind. In a sense, later on, the medieval commentators on dana, gift giving, you know, talk about Shraddha. He said, astikya buddhi. A mind that is said was astikya, meaning that the Shraddha, your donation, is within the context of a world order in which it becomes fruitful. A nastikya meaning you don't believe. After death, you are going to turn into carbon anyway, right? So in a sense, there's no purpose in it, right? So that's the kind of thing. So it has a certain amount of faith in the way that we normally in English use the word, meaning you believe in something that is there. But it's always in the context of a generosity and gift-giving. So that's the side of it. So in a sense, it's not like faith in a Lutheran sense. You know, which has little or nothing to do with activity. This is action-oriented Shraddha. So that's the connection that we are trying to say. The both sides are there. And I think the later commentators, when they say astikya buddhi, is onto something. If you take astikya away from its controversial nastika kind of thing in later philosophy, but if you take it as asti, there is this world order within which gift giving is meaningful. I think, but here it's very interesting. Shraddha is demoted now, because that becomes Ishtapurta. Ishtapurta is used, the sacrificing and gift giving. The purta is Shraddha, right? People who go to the higher way in the they don't give anything to anybody, so there's no Shraddha. Because they are receivers, not givers. I mean, that's, we're talking about the ascetic tradition. Sorry, went too far. Out there. Okay, let's then look here at... So asavaloka we have. Something that we may want to then also look at here is, what are we talking about? There's a Agni, there's a Samit, there's a Ardhuma, there's Archish, there's Angara, Vishpulinga. Right? Six kinds of things connected to a fire, setting a fire. So basically we have a sacrificial metaphor being used. That's why this is called the Panchagni Vidya. You know, Vidya connecting to five fires. But what is interesting is that sacrifice increasingly in the Upanishads and also to a degree in the Brahmanas, it's taken away from its action-oriented normal sacrifice. And it is given higher and broader meanings. So not that you deny the action. Sometimes it is denied. Sometimes it says you can do the action only with this knowledge. But knowledge of these homologies, these things, have become more central, right? So here you have sacrifice used as a, what I would say as a paradigm or a metaphor to talk about others. This happens later in Indian literature, right? Indian text, where sacrifice, ganya, or something like ashwamedha, that's horse sacrifice, is used as a kind of currency, it's a dollar or a pound. So this particular thing that you will do is worth 1,000 ashwamedhas. It's like saying, you know, 1,000 pounds this will be, right? It becomes a currency of sort. So it has been completely taken away, you know, from its root in sacrifice as such, but made into a coinage, you know, currency, in other words. Here we are not yet there, I think, but here you are, this is the Upadesha. You are taking sacrifice and substituting other things. So what is the Agni? Sacrifice has a fire. What is the Agni? He would say, that world there is the Agni. Right? Now you have substituted that. No Agni anymore, but Asavaloka, right? And then it goes on down the line like that with regard to... So is that okay? Yeah. So tasmin etasmin agnau deva shraddham juvati. So that's where we started out of. Sasvai avute somo raja sambhav. Now we go to the second fire. Parjanyo vava Gautama Agni. So fire, that's the rain cloud. So now we have come to a different level from Asavaloka to something atmospheric. Tasya sangvatsara eva samit. So it's there, the year is the samit firewood. Abrahani dhumo, akasho dhuma. So there are two different things here. Smoke is the thunder clouds, and here akasha, I missed it. I'm going to do a different one here. Abrang Dumaha, that's fine. Abrang Dumaha. I missed my place here. Vidyut Archihi, so it's the flamish lightning. Raduneyo Vishpulingaha, and the spark, and the hail is the sparks. So here we are talking about rain. As a sacrifice. Tasmin etasmin agnau somang rajanam jyoti. They offer soma, the king, which is probably here connected to the moon, because they thought that the moon was from where rain comes. There's some connection there. Tasya ahutehe vrishtihi sambhavati. From this comes rain. Just to anticipate a little bit, this whole thing is how the human being goes through reincarnation, right? So it's starting now at the beginning rather than at the end. So it starts with Asavaloka. From there comes the rain. and the rain comes to the earth. So that's the third one. So then we go to the third one. We go to the right place here. Okay. In Brihadaranyaka, Ayang Vai Loko Agnir Gautama. This world, Gautama, is a fire. And here you have Prithivi Vava Gautama Agni. So instead of Ayam Lokaha, you have Prithivi, which is the same thing, right, we saw earlier. So Ayam becomes this. And in this case, therefore, Asau must mean the sky, the vault of the heavens. Tasya Prithivi Eva Samit. Of it, the earth is the summit. Here you have Vayur is the summit in the Chandogya, because he had used the word Prithivi already, right? So there's a little difference there. Agnir Dhumo, Abhrang Dhuma. So you have smoke is the fire. Here you have Abhrang Dhuma. Smoke is the thundercloud. Cloud, yes. Ratrir Archish. Yeah, I'm sorry. Again, missed it. Akasho, the third one. I had to go to Akasho Dhuma. Ratrir Archish. So the night is the Archish. Disho Angaraha. Bhradhanaka has Chandrama Angaraha. Which is the moon as well, opposed to Disha. We had earlier, remember this has been transposed now, the earlier one. Nakshatrani Vishpulingaha, and here we have Antar Disha Vishpulingaha. So it's been from the one to the third, they have flipped it. Tasmine Tasmin Agnau Deva Vrishting Devati. In this one, the gods offer the rain. Tasya Ahuter Annang Sambhavati. From this offering comes into being food. So, this is the generation of plants, etc. Purusho Vava Kila. Oh, Purusho Vava Gautama Agni. So, a man is the Agni. So, here the human being. Tasya Vyattam Eva Samit. And in the Brihadaranyaka, in the Chandogya, we have Tasya Vageva Samit. Vyatam is its open mouth. Basically, as you are eating, putting the food in the mouth, the openness of the mouth becomes the vyat. It's the summit over here, vag, speech, which again, opening mouth. Prano dhumo, breath. As you know, in this area, there are five kinds of breath. There are prana, apana, udana, samana, vyana. So this prana is the main breath. Jiva Archihi, we have Vag Archihi, so speech as opposed to tongue. Chakshurangara, Chakshurangara, the sight, seeing is the Angara. Just a brief mention of Chakshus here. It's really not the, how do I translate it? I hope I've done it right. Yes, sight, yeah, I do sight. Chakshus is not I. In Sanskrit, so quite frequently people translate it wrongly. Chakshus is sight, meaning the power or the actuality of seeing. When you use the physical organ, which is this one here, it's called akshan. And therefore chakshus is always in the singular. And akshan can be, and most often is in the dual. So, Angara. Shrotram Vishpulingaha, the hearing. And Shrotram again is the hearing and not ear. Ear is Karna, often Karnau, two ears. Tasmin ne tasmin agnau deva annam jyoti. In this fire, which is the man, now here is the male human being, gods offer the anna, the food that has now come down from the heavens. Tasya ahutehe retha sambhavati. From this ahuti comes into being the semen, which is the initial beginnings of a human being. You must realize that in the Gayana, what is it? obstetrics, is it, I guess? I mean, the medical knowledge about how a human being is, a fetus comes into being. There's some differences, I think, of opinion here, but mostly the female played the part of a passive container. Quite frequently viewed as kshetra, like a field, as opposed to the seed. So the seed is what determines what comes on the other side. If you put a mango seed, you get a mango tree. If you put a banyan seed, you get a banyan tree. And the woman is like the kshetra. So this is where it's coming here. So the retas already has the potential of a baby. Now comes the woman. Yoshava Agnir Gautama, a woman. Gautama is a fire. Tasya upasta eva samit. Upasta would be her generative organ. Lomani dhumaha in the Brahadaranyaka. The pubic hair is the dhuma. In Chandogya Upanishad, yad upamantrayate sa dhuma. When she is being called to have sex. And that is the dhuma. Yonir archihi. The flame is the yoni. I have given it here as a vagina, but it could also be the womb. Not always a distinction between the two. Yad antaha karoti, this is an interesting word. Maybe a sort of a puritanical sensibilities of the Sanskrit language being, you don't really use the word for have sex. You know? What you do inside, you know, seems it's like saying I go to the bathroom, you know, rather than using the word for what you do there, you know, sort of a. And they are the angara, and abhinanda are the vispulinga, the sparks are the abhinanda, and abhinanda here it's difficult to exactly know what it means. How we have translated it. And I translated the climax, but I think what it is, the climax. Given that this is the woman, it's unclear whether it's the woman's climax or the man's climax. But it's somehow the kind. And the word nanda, the word ananda, have written a little article on that. And it's very clear that its earliest meanings, it meant it had a very deeply sexual meaning. And if you look at some of the places where ananda comes in the Upanishads, they say, what is the locus of various things? So what the locus of chakshus is akshan, these powers. And what is the locus of ananda, they ask? And that's say upasta, the private organ. That's what we have. It is very interesting that these two, I was looking at it yesterday, the translations of Brihadaranyaka and Chandogya, published by the Ramakrishna Mission, has the Sanskrit, but not the English translation of this. So even 1968, still unable to, this was very clear in the late 19th century translations. Quite frequently, the European translators use Latin to translate the Sanskrit, which they thought was too obscene.
So this one, do they just leave it out?
Just leave it out
or
completely.
Just translate it completely?
No, just as if it's not there. I mean, Sanskrit is there, but English, they just go to the next one. Yeah. So that, I thought that was very hilarious yesterday. Right. Okay. So, tasyaha. So tasmine tasmin. Agnau, in this agni, in this fire, which is the woman now, deva retho juhvati. The gods offer the semen. Tasya ahutyaha purushaha sangbhavati. From this ahuti, a a man comes in. So this is the last. So Jivati, Yava Jivati, I'm reading now the Brihadaranyaka version. From here, the two versions are very different. So he lives as long as he lives. Ata yada mriyate, and then when he dies, ata enam agneya haranti. They take him to Agni. So back into Agni now. From one kind of Agni, which is the metaphorical Agni, which is the woman, he's been taken to the real Agni of the cremation ground. But when we go to Chandogya, right at the top of that page 36, Tasya Ahutehe Garbha Sambhavati, rather than Purusha, a little bit more medical, a fetus comes into being. And then, and with this we'll end, in the next paragraph, Ititu Panchamyam Ahutau. Apaha Purusha Vachaso Bhavati Iti. Iti too, in this manner, in the fifth Ahuti, in the fifth offering, water, which came from the heavens, water, become or take on the voice of a human being. Yes, the baby is born and he is now crying. Right? Purusha Vachasa. And this is very interesting because if you look at the question which we had at 533, and if you that I gave you number 15 over here in this one, do you see exact parallel of this of the Chandogya? So it's a narrative is deliberate here. You look at 15. Wait for you to get it. You see that? Veta yata panchamyam ahutau apaha purusha vachaso bhavanti. He asked Shvetaketu, do you know, how in the fifth offering, water takes on the voice of a human being? And this is the answer to that now. Coming right back. So it sort of, it ties the two, the question that is asked, to the explanation that is given. And we'll stop there. And we have now the very interesting and very important next paragraphs, which deals with the two kinds of people, one in the village and one in the wilderness. It's a very interesting one, early statement of ideology of asceticism in India that you have in the next one. Okay? Thank you.